Okay, thank you for inviting me. Pleasure to be back here. I'm going to talk about this paper I wrote with David about circles and lines and something neat. Yes. So I don't have to tell you what the ADS-CFT correspondence is, but I wrote it here anyway. The duality between supersymmetric ring mills in four dimension and string theory on ADS-5 process 5 with G-string and GN mills related like that, and the radius of curvature of ADS and the string coupling are related by lambda, which is the Etoft coupling. I'm actually not going to need the metric for any of the talk, but that's the metric. Now, the problem with this and with most dualities is that you can usually calculate things only on one side of the duality, and you can't calculate it on the other side, and so it's okay. What I'm saying here is that most observables, they're either too constrained by supersymmetry, so nothing interesting happens, and but you can extrapolate, but nothing interesting happens, or the more interesting observables, non-trivial ones, you can calculate them for small lambda nn or for very large lambda nn, and usually you can't extend it all the way through. And you have to go to something pretty subtle where, you know, you want to stay pretty close to this, something that is constrained but not too constrained to be trivial, where you can actually see things at all lambda and all n, and it's not trivial. And a circular Wilson loop will be such an example of such a thing. And we'll be able to calculate it for all lambda and all n. So the outline of the talk is the following. I already gave you the motivation, and I'm sure you're all motivated to hear about it, excited. Then I'm going to show you the calculation of rainbow diagrams for a circular Wilson loop in the gauge theory, which was done by those people, and is the main thing we based our, that was the thing that got us going. And it gives a remarkable result. You get the right result of ADS just from the rainbow diagrams. And I'm going to try to explain why this works. It's related to a fact that there is, in this theory, there is a global conformal anomaly when you go from a line to a circle. And I'm going to demonstrate this in perturbation theory and rederive this result, in essence, and in ADS by independent demonstration of this anomaly. And because this is not an anomaly, it will be easy to generalize this for arbitrary loops, and we will be able to relate arbitrary open loops to the ones that you get by a conformal transformation and are closed, or vice versa. From any closed loop, you can, by a conformal transformation, map it to some open curve, and the ratio of those two Wilson loops will be again given by this anomaly. So this anomaly can be written very nicely as a matrix model, a very simple matrix model, and we can do explicit calculations in it, calculate things to all orders in lambda and n, and we're going to see what the results are, and they're interesting. And then we can try to compare those to what we know in ADS, which is limited, but so we know something from ADS, and we can compare. I'm going to list a few questions that this raises and conclude with conclusions. So I'm going to start in perturbation theory, Young-Mills perturbation theory. And I'm going to calculate this Wilson loop. If you heard me talking about this Wilson loop before, over an object, it couples both to the scalars and to the gauge field. And this is important for many reasons, and it's related to supersymmetry, and you're going to see soon why it works, why this is a good observable. So I'm just going to first calculate this exchange of one particle along the line. So it's second order in G squared. We have the trivial one. And then you have the double integral over the loop. And you get a contraction of two A's here times the tangent vectors. And you have a contraction of two scalars from here times the those factors. Theta is a unit vector. And this is the magnitude of the velocity. And there is a relative minus sign because of this factor of I, which is also important. But this will basically guarantee that when the ends of the lines come close together, there will be a cancellation between them. And that will cancel, basically, the divergence that comes from x of s1 going to x of s2 will be canceled by the fact that those two factors will be the same. So this expression is not divergent, which is one of the nicest features of adding the second term. So far this is true for a general loop, but let me concentrate on a circle. And for a circle, you know that the tangent vectors are normal to the position vectors. If you have a circle of unit size around one, that is true, and you get that the thing here in the denominator, you can translate it to the difference in the velocities, and you get twice the magnitude of the velocity minus the dot product of the velocities of the two points. So you get that the numerator divided by the denominator is just a half. So the effective propagator here is a constant, does not depend on the position, which immediately suggests that you should be able to write this in zero dimensions. There is no space, doesn't show up here. So this is the propagator. And you get that the Wilson loop is 1 plus lambda over 8 plus higher order terms. So if I consider higher order diagrams with no internal vertices, basically get that propagator I saw I had before, which was a constant. So instead of this Wilson line, I can just consider a point. And it has a few arms sticking out, which is the number of propagators you want to connect to it. And you have this matrix model propagator. G squared over 2 times, this is the factor coming from the gauge group. That's the indices in the adjoint. A and B. So if there are no interactions, we can sum this, we can just write this as trace of e to the m. This is the order, here you have m to the 10th. This is the order m to the 10th term. So you have here five propagators. So if you expand this to order 10th order, you're going to get a factor of m to the 10th over m factorial, which would be given by this graph, and that's equal to that graph. And the action is just the quadratic action, which would give this propagator. and for to get the right combinatorics of the this UN gauge theory, M has to be a Hermitian, and by a matrix, well, for SUN you take it to be priceless, for UN you take it to be any matrix. Now this matrix model is exactly solvable, and for large N you can calculate it by a bunch of different ways, and you find this result, that the expectation value of the Wilson loop goes like 2 over square root of lambda times a Bessel function with the argument square root of lambda. A simple way to see it, see that, well, for large lambda, the Bessel function behaves like an exponent times some prefactor, and we get the exponent of square root of lambda, which agrees with the ADS result. And I'm going to rederive the ADS result in a few minutes, but in ADS, Wilson loops go like the exponent of square root of lambda times some number. In this case, the number is 1. This gives the right result for ADS. And simple to see that you would get square root of lambda. It's just because there are, you can count how many planar diagrams there are, and it's pretty simple for this problem, and it's basically the propagator can't go too far, well, this is not planar, but it can't go too far around, because then it will, the other things will have to be contracted only with the ones next to them. They can't, basically, for it to be planar, they all have to close with a very near neighbor, and that means that instead of getting lambda m, which would be if you would were able to contract anyone with anyone, which was is the result for U1 at n going to infinity, it's suppressed to square root of lambda. So this was the calculation that Erickson, Semenov, and Zaremba did. And we wanted to understand why this works so nicely. There must be some reason why you are able to get a result from perturbation theory that agrees with ADS. Non-trivial result. And the reason is that there is an anomaly in this theory. This theory is conformally invariant, but there is this anomaly. So for a straight line, and so if we took instead of a circle, a straight Wilson line, the Wilson loop will be 1 by supersymmetry. It's a BPS object. So conformally, you can conformally map a line into a circle, and you would automatically conclude that a circle is also 1. But that is actually not the case, as we just saw. It's not the case if you do the calculation in ADS, and it wasn't the calculation when you do the calculation in the gauge theory. So what are we doing wrong? Well, one way to say it is that a straight line goes from minus infinity to infinity, but actually misses one point at infinity. So we have, if you want to map this to a circle, you have to add this one point, and you're going to have to look for a theory that lives at that point. So you're going to get a contribution from a matrix model. Mm-hmm. Now that's hand-waving, even though it's probably correct at some deep level. But we can actually do a more direct calculation and just do this conformal transformation and see what goes wrong. So we are looking at such an inversion x going to x over x squared. You can check that the derivative is transformed, well, x squared is because of the weight, but it transformed by this tensor on u nu, which is unit tensor minus this factor, x nu over x squared. In particular, the gauge field will transform the same way as a derivative, and you're going to get this factor. So, if you look in gauge theory, in the calculation we did before, and you start with you have the propagators for a straight line, and you map them over to the circle, you have to put in those factors into the propagator. The scalar propagator will not have anything like this, because it's a scalar. It transforms covariantly. But the gluon propagator, at least in Feynman gauge, and you can do it in other gauges too, is going to be, instead of the propagator G, then you knew you multiply it by those two factors of I. And the difference, and so you can check what it's equal to, and it's equal to this thing, which would be the regular propagator, g mu nu over x minus y squared, and this is because of the dimension of the fields, you get these factors, which don't play any role. They cancel out. So if this was all the result, you would get that it transforms covariantly under an inversion, and there would not be anything interesting. But you have also those two terms. And they are total derivatives. So we see that when you do the calculation, the difference between a straight line and a circle will be a total derivative. Now, a total derivative, you can add a total derivative to the a gluon propagator, that's analogous to a gauge transformation. So you can undo this by a gauge transformation. So again, because this theory is gauge invariant, this should go away. But this expression has potential singularities. So we should go over the proof of gauge invariance and see if those singularities show up and screw up gauge invariance. So here I have, again, that this is the difference between the propagator and the transformed propagator. It's a total derivative. I'm going to integrate it over the circle, double integral. And you see what you get. And there are potential singularities when x hits y and when x hits 0 when you do the this integration. So I put a cutoff epsilon near x equals 0. So and do the x integral from 0 plus epsilon to 0 minus epsilon. So this factor of x minus epsilon will give me a boundary term y plus epsilon divided by y minus epsilon. So this is the cutoff expression. Now, you look at the integrand here, you're integrating over y around the circle, and this y plus epsilon divided by y minus epsilon is usually 1 when y is big. So the log is 0. So this is usually 0, except when you get close to the origin. So it behaves like a delta function. It's effectively a delta function. And you have to check what the weight is of this delta function. You integrate it from epsilon to infinity and from minus infinity to epsilon. Again, you integrate. It's basically integrating around the whole loop minus the epsilon a vicinity of zero, and you get the same result as before. Now this is, I mean, this explains why, you know, those singularities explain that there is a problem in this kind of calculation, and you get this result, which is exactly the same as the result we got before, for the difference between the circle and the line to this order. It is it's a little bit subtle in defining things. There are cutoffs here and stuff like that. So this is a very, see, this is a very strange function. It's a total derivative. So it's almost always zero unless it's equal to minus lambda over 8 only if your curve crosses the origin.
It's a very interesting question. It's a function that tells you when a point is on a circle.
zero or one.
Or a number, finite number, if the point is on a circle. And actually, if anybody knows it, then it's mathematical.
So it's not even a distribution.
It's a distribution.
But it's less than, it's
like a delta characteristic function.
Right. It's weaker than a delta function.
Yeah. And
well, it's like, you know, I mean, you know examples of this for functions that give you whether a point is in, say, a sphere,
right,
which is the flux of the magnetic field. That gives you 1 if it's in, 0 if it's out. Mm-hmm. But this is a case where this tells you in any dimension, actually, whether a point is on a circle.
I'm confused. I mean, are you saying that n equals 4 super Yang nulls is not really conformally invariant?
On R4, it's not conformally invariant because R4 itself is not conformally invariant.
Sure. Okay, so put it on a sphere.
Then it will be conformally invariant.
The circle goes to the circle, and all circles are the same.
Oh, I don't have.
Oh, no, wait a minute. So this, I thought this was a small distance effect or something. So like you said, if you start with circles and you just map them conformally to other circles, the singularities, everything is fine.
Everything is fine because you didn't because your circle doesn't go through the origin.
You see, on the sphere, in a conformal transformation, it doesn't have a singular point. It's perfectly regular. An inversion has a singular point where you map. That's why R4.
It's only a singular point because you didn't put the point
in. Well, that's the difference between R4 and the sphere.
Okay, so the conformal group doesn't act on R4, so it's not meaningful to ask whether it's conformally invariant.
Right, but any local things that are mapped, you can still consider global big conformal transformations as long as the fields don't see strongly the singular point. The thing is conformally invariant. Green's functions are conformally invariant. Theory is conformally invariant.
If you write a three-point function, it's given in terms of, it is conformally invariant, unless you map one of the points to infinity. So all conformal transformations that leave all three points at finite distance are symmetries.
The strange thing here is that the simple thing is an observable which goes to infinity. That's the thing that's wrong.
So on a sphere, there's no sort of VPS?
No, on a sphere, it works fine.
Well, on the sphere, there isn't
no
BPS.
There is
no
BPS.
There's
no BPS.
Nothing. This is really a straight line.
If it goes along the equator, because that's not good.
It's still curving. The particle is not at rest. And if you do it on a sphere, or you can do it back at ice on a sphere, you get the same result as you can for a circle.
So, one nice thing about this calculation is that even though I assumed here that this was a circle, it didn't have to be a circle. It's only topologically a circle. It has to be any closed curve. What mattered was only its behavior near the origin, the fact that it crossed the origin.
Will you get the same result from kind of introduce a symmetrical couple, right? From minus epsilon, zero minus epsilon, zero plus epsilon?
Yes.
If you would, it doesn't make sense to introduce a symmetrical couple.
I don't know. I might get a different result, but it's just because I don't understand this function very well. I don't know. I don't know how to. I mean, I'm using a. This is not a very nice cutoff. So if I knew how to treat it better, I could answer that. I don't really know.
That function is ordered with respect to x, but not with respect to y. Why is that?
Oh, well, I you can symmetrize it. So you have a term which is a total derivative with respect to x, a total derivative plus a total derivative with respect to y, because those are the same curves.
Right. Where does that case when one of the edges is off the circle line? So you only have the normal end. Maybe you get to.
Yes.
Well, it's normally when you go to the transformation, the property has a du x.
The original.
I mean,
this is the original expression.
Right.
So there is a d mu x of something and a d mu y of something.
Right.
And in that one, I symmetrized it.
Right. With y, I mean, well, do you want to maybe I should ask this in a minute when you talk about that for a second.
Yeah, I'm not going to really talk about that, but you
that's,
can ask
that's,
me then.
That's the tricky part of the entire thing. So you got to talk about it.
No, but that is half, but if you make a general Bichat transformation,
right.
That's how things transform. This has the form of a Bichat. Under a Bichat transformation.
Yeah, I understand, but I guess it's important that we don't settle this. So I guess the point, do you want to say that you want to get to that picture, you want to get to that picture, or should we take it as already explained?
No, I'm going to explain this picture.
Yeah.
So, I draw an arbitrary diagram, and I replace one of the propagators by this total derivative. I mark them here by circles, circle propagator. We showed here what happens when you do the integration over this end of the line, and you see that this you get a contribution near the origin, which is proportional to a delta function. You are going to get the same thing when you do this integral over four space over this point. You're going to get an integral over a three sphere around this point. You're going to get that contribution from a three sphere of size epsilon around that, which will also be proportional to the delta function, making the other end of propagators hit the origin. So that would tell you that the only contribution is if it's a total derivative forcing this. So it means that you get a contribution only when this end is near the boundary, near the origin. That's a delta function which forces this point to be here, and by the scaling argument, it forces all the points in your graph to be at the vicinity of the origin. Mm-hmm. That's so it reduces to a contribution near this point. Mm-hmm. So the difference is going to be a matrix model, just a local contribution.
Okay. Oh, you're not going to claim that it's actually the or the same matrix model. That's
right.
But you are going to claim that in a transparency, right? Before you go, it is a little more subtle because at the end, away from the at the end where it connects up to the ordinary propagators, it's still with respect to y, but the rest of the graph has y dependence. So it doesn't immediately give you a total derivative. There's this long song and dance about chasing through the word identities and adding up all the graphs,
that time would all cancel out if it wasn't just one that.
Right. So is that right? I mean, basically, when you the content of the word identity is that when you consider all the graphs, it's going to give you what? Yeah. So it has to come only from that same point. Okay.
Okay. But the real point is what you asked.
No, you see, you know, the argument, I mean, if you're not, if it's, if you don't have that point there,
right,
then it manifestly cancels because two circles and R4 can be mapped to each other by a Capolin transformation. They don't pass the,
right.
So there's nothing singular there. And yet, when you transform one to another, you get these extra terms propagated.
Yes, yes, okay.
So they gotta cancel unless there's a singular.
Okay. Sounds good. Yep.
So, in our paper, we claimed that this proves that the matrix model is quadratic, but we actually realized that it doesn't. And in principle, all we can see here is that the details of the matrix model come from the UV, where all the graph shrinks to a point. And we still think that, at least for the n equal 4 theory, it should be quadratic. And part of the reason, one reason is you'll see how well things work with ADS, that it leaves little doubt, I think. Another thing was an explicit calculation of the cubic term, which cancels, mm-hmm. which was also done by Erickson and Remo. And the other thing is that n equals 4 has to be beautiful.
Well, a different beautiful answer would be that you get the IKKT model. Is that excluded? That is, you get a commutator term.
I was thinking about that, but it is the natural thing to get in some way. But it's not, I mean, one question would be what is the correct observable in that theory? Mm-hmm. It would clearly not be in that model,
yeah.
You have, it's basically xi, xj. Something like that. It cannot be this, the observable, because this has no potential. It could be something like this, x1. Something like this, and at least naively it behaves, you know, the first term, this has a quadratic potential, classically. So it could be, that that's the.
But I guess this doesn't have the x squared. I mean, you have an m squared. I mean, I guess that's the m squared plus a commutator bit. But that's, I guess, not n equals supersymmetric.
Right.
Okay. That's good. Good.
Yeah. I mean, it could be that it's the IKKT model, but this is the effective m. The commutator is the m. And
I thought that there was sort of an implicit argument in the paper that actually was that the interactions didn't change the matrix model, which I assume went as follows. If you keep all the vertices fixed except the one arm and loop and integrate, you get zero. So to do the order, that's how the graph is the order of integration to the positions of different vertices. So first integrate over the position of the vertex that attaches to the loop while it's fixed. That gives you zero, unless that vertex is right on the x. Now, right on the x might give you a delta function, but I thought there were some words in your paper to the effect that you get a one-dimensional delta function, not a four-dimensional delta function.
Right. What?
And therefore, it vanishes in the distributional sense. It vanishes when you integrate over the position of that vertex.
Well, what we...
Still might be correct. It's hard to argue
with
power counting. You see, power counting...
Yes.
It's a thing of scale and variance.
Right.
It's hard to argue.
Right.
But this is a very strange function. This.
It is a very strange
function. I think to make that a real proof, we have to, we really need to understand how function that. Logical.
But it really is, I mean, something which is 1 here and 0 here is really less than the distribution. It vanishes when integrated against any smooth function path.
Yes.
Yeah, but then that's just a better intuition of scale and variance, which doesn't like turn off interactions. But
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So one question would be whether, assuming that it is, I mean, one important question is to prove, really to complete the proof that it is a quadratic matrix model for n equals 4, and then you can ask whether for other conformal field theories it's also that, or more complicated matrix models, which could be interesting. So, I showed you how you get this conformal anomaly in perturbation theory, but there is a neat calculation that you can do in ADS, which is gives you the same, it's related to the same anomaly. So in ADS, a Wilson loop is given by a minimal surface. It's a fundamental string ending on the boundary of ADS. Here you have the fundamental string. Here's the boundary of ADS, and it's a circle there. Then you can find this minimal surface. I can actually, I'll now prove the result without doing any calculation. The action for the minimal surface is proportional to square root of lambda from dimensional counting, and it's divergent, and you have to subtract the cutoff, and we discussed this in a paper with David and Uguri, what the origin of this cutoff is, what the origin of this counter term is, but we don't need that now. Just the fact this is divergent, and you subtract the circumference divided by the cutoff, where I have here some epsilon distance from the boundary of ADS. Now you notice that for a smooth curve, the geodesic curvature of moving along this line, it has the contribution in this plane, but the main contribution is staying close to the boundary of ADS because geodesics want to go inside. So kappa goes like 1 over epsilon, like this divergence, the geodesic curvature. And now I just use, so I'm going to replace here 1 over epsilon by the geodesic curvature.
And it's the extrinsic curvature.
Well, it's not a geodesic.
Okay. Right. Okay, yeah. And the integral over the scalar curvature in the bulk plus the integral over the this curvature on the boundary gives you the Euler number. So I'm going to do this replacement, and I get that the action is the area plus the integral over the scalar curvature minus the Euler character, minus square root of lambda. Now for a line in a circle, for a line, it's simplest to see. You have the minimal surface is just a slice through ADS, and it's going to be ADS2, the world sheet. It has going to have constant negative curvature, and in particular, it's going to be, because this result has to be finite, it's going to have to be minus 2. So this is 0. So the only difference in going between a line and a circle is that change in the scalar, in the Euler number, and we define the Euler. You can argue what the Euler number is for a straight line. The world sheet is an upper half, is a half plane. So you can argue what the correct definition of the Euler number is, but we use this integral expression, and therefore it's 0. For a circle, it's clear that it's 1 on the disk. The world sheet is a disk, so chi is 1. So you get e to the square root of lambda.
And the formula there is the Gauss-Bonnet theorem, and where chi is the Euler number of a two-dimensional surface.
That's right.
Of the minimal surface.
Of the minimal surface.
Okay. So in both cases, the minimal surface is topologically a disk.
That's right. But in one case, it's the upper half plane, and then if you can't use the Gauss-Bonnet theorem to define the Euler number, you get 0.
Well, that's because you're not including the other contributions to the boundary.
be exactly, and that's exactly the right thing to do.
One part of it.
Exactly, that's exactly it.
All right, this makes it seem more topological than it really is.
Okay, maybe I shouldn't call this the Euler number, but it's this integral over, you know, defined naively. It's this integral over the world sheet.
So you're not including part of the boundary for the upper half plane, and you include the whole boundary for the
yes, but that is, you know that for a straight line, it's, you don't have to include the point on infinity. And so, yeah. And again, now,
this is not the logic. I think it's not the logic.
No, I would not say that's the way to see the difference.
I mean,
it's a property of two-dimensional surfaces.
The definition.
A one-dimensional curve is the boundary of a minimal area.
How do you define the Euler class for a non-compact surface? It could be ambiguous. Whether you include this point on infinity or not, and this definition gives you, this is one definition. It's not your standard definition, of course. And in string theory, we always use this fact that the disk is the same as the half plane, and here it's not. It clearly is not. The circle is not the same thing as the straight line. There is an anomaly. So I'm using this particular definition of the Euler number to characterize this anomaly. Now, in the original way of writing things, you didn't know really what would happen under a conformal transformation, because this should be a conformal transformation of the boundary maps to an isometry of ADS. So it maps this to itself. The problem is that it's divergent. So once I wrote it like this, as a convergent integral, now I know that for any minimal surface, this does not change under any conformal transformation. And the only thing that changes is whether is exactly this boundary term at infinity, which gives me the difference in the Euler number. Okay, so as I already said during a lot of the talk, this is true for a general loop. If you take this curve and map it by conformal transformation to a curve that's asymptotically straight, and it's important here that those two lines are parallel to each other, then the difference between them would be this factor, which is missing 1 over n. This, the ratio between the closed Wilson loop and the open Wilson loop is this matrix model expression. This is totally general. And explained it in more detail in ADS while I talked this fact. The same thing is true in perturbation theory. It's the fact that it's a total derivative and gets only boundary contribution, doesn't depend on the shape of the curve. So now that we sort of derived our result, we can start having fun. So we have the matrix model, and here I'm assuming that it's quadratic. We didn't prove that, but you're going to see that the results are so nice. So you want to calculate this observable in this Gaussian matrix model, and there is a standard way of calculating such observables. You diagonalize M, and then you get here the sum over the exponent of the eigenvalues, and the action is this, again, the sum of the eigenvalues squared, and I rescaled M, so lambda over 2n moved here instead of there. And you get this famous factor of the van der Monde determinant in the measure. The trick to actually, so now you have an n-dimensional integral, and
why is this different than the thing that gave the Bessel function?
It is the thing that gave the Bessel function.
Only from
Harkin. Oh,
infinite.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. So to actually do the n integrals, the simplest way is to replace the m. So the van der Monde determinant is the determinant of the polynomials or monomials mi to the power j minus 1. That's that matrix. Instead, you can take any linear combination of such polynomials as long as the higher order's term is this one, and then the simplest, and then you choose a particularly convenient set of polynomials, and it's simplest in our case to take the Hermite polynomials, which are orthogonal with respect to this measure, which makes many of the integrals trivial. Makes many of the integrals trivial and leaves some integrals to be dug up from Gretchen and Rizik. And after doing that, which I won't take you through, you find the exact result to all n and all lambda, and that this matrix model is equal to a Laguerre polynomial of this thing, the exponent of that.
Is this a classic result or is this new?
It's an old result.
Oh, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. We redid it, but then later we found it somewhere. So now you have to dig again in Gretchen and Rizik and try to manipulate this, because this expression is pretty bad if you want to understand anything. It's trivial. If you want to plug in n equals 2, n equals 3, anything like that, you just get this, you just look up what the Laguerre polynomial is. But if you want to do the 1 over n expansion, you have n here, 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 and here. So it's not obvious to see how the systematic 1 over n expansion is, but this is what it is. For the first few terms in the 1 over n expansion is this Bessel function that we saw before, and then another Bessel function, and then another Bessel function, another Bessel function. So this is order 1 over n squared, this is over order 1 over n to the fourth, and this is also order 1 over n to the fourth, but a different power of lambda. Mm-hmm. Now, in principle, we would want to compare this to ADS. So what we're saying is that this thing should be equal to the partition function on the disk. And this one would be the partition function on the disk with a handle. But we don't know how to do that in ADS, so we're not going to do that. But in ADS, we do know how to do, we know a little more about large lambda. So let me take the large lambda expansion. And all, well, first, actually, I'm doing the large n expansion and then the large lambda. All the Bessel functions go like e to the square root of lambda times corrections. And we can actually here get all the 1 over n corrections. And you see this sum over the genus p, this factor lambda to some power proportional to p, or linear NP, a factor of 96 to the p power n to the 2p and p factorial. So one thing we can say, you see, this is e to the square root of lambda plus corrections in power series in lambda to the 3 halves over n squared. So we know that e to the square root of lambda is the ADS result. Here we see that it's going to break down at some point. And that point is when lambda is equal to n squared, when this thing becomes bigger than square root of lambda. That's when this result breaks down. What happens then? Well, then we are at very, very strong coupling. Lambda is of order n squared.
Sorry, it's not lambda to the 3 halves of order n squared?
No, because it has to overwhelm the exponential. Right? There's an exponential of e to the... This exponentiates to e to this, and you have e to the square root of lambda plus square root of lambda plus lambda 3 halves over n squared. So it's... So the new regime, you have to go for very, 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 very large lambda.
Wow.
Is when lambda is greater than n squared. Then you get this new exponent plus corrections. And in terms of the S dual variables, you go from G string to 1 over G string, or G N mils to something like over G N mils, lambda to N squared over lambda. And you get this expression in terms of the dual variables. And this should be the Etoffe line at weak coupling.
Wow.
If you have a prediction for that, then, I mean, you can compare, but we don't know that.
So that's really a weak coupling out of the supergravity regime again, back in the...
That's out of the supergravity regime again, yes.
That should be a classical calculation or something. Yeah, I don't think they've ever done that. I don't think they've
ever done that. Do you know how to begin? How do you define it? I don't know.
Well, the Etoffe line, was defined in terms of gauge field with a singular boundary, with a singular gauge transformation on the loop. That's it. Yeah, it might be doable. That's neat.
So, I want to compare this to ADS. So in ADS, that's a valid approximation to our theory for very big lambda, for very big n, and very small g string, or g in mil squared. And the result, as we said, is e to the square root of lambda. I'll try to do a little better than that in a second, but that's at least the classical result. Now, what happens when lambda is greater than 1, and lambda hits 1, then we have to do an S duality. That's the point where lambda is greater than n. And now we have to calculate, instead of the fundamental string, a D1 brain. The result can also be done in the dual supergravity, the S dual ADS, and you get again this factor of the square root of lambda, but now it's the dual lambda, and you get a 1 over GS dual because it's a D1 brain and not a fundamental string. And when you plug it in, it's just e to the square root of lambda. So you see that in ADS, the result e to the square root of lambda extends beyond the point where you'd expect it to break down, g squared equals 1, all the way to where the dual ADS breaks down, lambda equals n squared, or lambda tilde equals 1. So it's exactly the same thing as in the matrix model. You get with the Wilson loop, go like e to the square root of lambda for large n, for lambda anywhere between 1 and n squared. So this matrix model knows about these strings, as you said. Now, in the this was the fact that this result extended all the way to n lambda of order n squared was exactly because of this power, because you have your lambda to the 3/2 p. Now I'm gonna I already did that. So let's try to do this. It doesn't really work as well as we hoped, and this is also different than what we wrote in the paper. But you can sort of try to, you can say some things about the one over n corrections in string theory. And what we expect is that the corrections to the Wilson loop will behave like this function. Well, let me explain those terms to you. First, you're going to have add handles if you to get to higher genus. If the handle has any area, that's not a minimal surface. So you only had degenerate handles. And the area stays the same as before. That gives you e to the square root of lambda at all genus. Now you're adding p handles, and that you have symmetry between the handles, you get 1 over p factorial. Now every handle has two ends, so you get g strings to 2p. And apart from that, you get some entropy factor, lambda to some np divided by 4, where np is the dimension of moduli space. What it means basically is that this thing can end anywhere on the surface. So for every end of a handle, you get more or less the area of the surface. Or it's not really, the area is divergent, it's not the area, but at least the units are is square root of lambda for every end of handle, or a factor of lambda for an entire handle. That comes from normalizing the zero modes. This power of lambda. So the dimension of moduli space, if those were not degenerate surfaces, would be 6p minus 3. That's the dimension of moduli space for Riemann surface for a disk with p handles. But the handles have to be generate, which removes two moduli for every handle, leaves you 4p minus 3. 4p is exactly those four ones that I indicated before. It's twice the area of the surface. And 3 is the comes from the symmetry of the, I mean, at genus 0, it's from the symmetries of the disks. Yeah. Conformal killing vectors, 3 conformal killing vectors on the disk.
It doesn't matter how the amplitude is in the length of the handle, the separation of the ends, is that?
How would that? Oh, it drops out because it's zero width.
Zero width, but I would assume the rubber thing about this is like a graviton propagator. A zero width handle is really a massless state.
That's right.
And that could be, there'll be a propagator, it depends on how far apart these things are on the disk.
Yeah, well, leading, all it has to do is fall off
on
the far line.
I know, right? Is that the point that
it's,
I guess
you're leading.
I see. So you say it's dominated by the region where they're close.
No, they're far.
They're far.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where the ends. You say that's what it is.
Is there a change?
And you're roughly getting a particular area.
Right.
On that.
I don't miss them area anything.
So what? So what would you expect to get?
Well, he's saying that there's an extra term which will depend on the distance that the right might reduce.
Yeah.
It might be good.
Yeah, because, I mean, soon you're going to see where this calculation doesn't work. So, the string coupling is lambda squared over n squared. So, if you, this gives the right, this gives 1 over n to the 2p, as we found before, but it gives the power of lambda 12p minus 3 over 4, where the matrix model result was 6p minus 3 over 4. And we saw that 6p minus 3 is the right thing for us to be able to extrapolate to where we should be able to.
But maybe you have
to find it. Yeah. So, I mean, what I thought was that the dilaton should be renormalized because of this world sheet. But maybe what you're saying is the right way to correct this calculation. So, some interesting questions that we have. I want to complete the proof that it is indeed the quadratic matrix model that describes the circle. Another interesting question is, as I told you, in large n, the exact result is this Bessel function, which for large lambda behaves like e to the square root of lambda. But it actually has another contribution, e to the minus square root of lambda, which is negligible, but it's exactly negligible like an instanton. This is, from string theory, this is another classical solution with, instead of action square root of lambda or minus square root of lambda, here the action is square root of lambda. So, if we were able to do the alpha prime expansion in ADS, we would find this classical result times this entire series, which you cannot sum. And I would think that you would conclude that you're missing some kind of instanton.
The first series is not a Gödel sum.
So, another way to see that you have to include this term is the fact that the ADS result is a function of square root of lambda. And the corrections are functions of square root of lambda, but you expect to get a function which is entire in lambda, does not have a branch cut. So, you know, even if this sum is not correct, it's very hard to see how that would lead to an entire function in lambda. So you have to add a function where you replace lambda by minus square root of lambda. So, the question is, what is this instanton? Whether it really exists, really in an object of string theory. Another thing you can ask, you can look at other observables. So you can look at two circles, and now you can do two things. They can be two identical circles. They can be a single trace operator, which means basically that you add a 2 here in front of the m. And that's very simple to see that it's just the replacement of lambda going to 4 lambda. In particular, the area is doubled, as you would expect in ADS. You can also look at this operator, where you have 2 traces, and it's this kind of thing, which is doable and messy out here. The integrals are doable, but it's much worse than this one, the single circle, and it's not totally clear what it's good for. But there's probably information there that we just don't know how to extract. And the last thing would be very nice if we have a, assuming that we find a proof for this in the field theory, you would also want a proof from string theory, or if not a proof, at least something that would tell you why you get a contribution, why you get a matrix model, why is the difference between, why is there this conformal anomaly in string theory? I showed it to you on the classical level, and even there it wasn't totally convincing, I guess, but it has to be there in the deep level, the fact that there is a conformal anomaly in this theory.
And then from a string theory point of view, it's very hard to see because string theory, order by order, one over the G string, is naturally a non-prime string. And whereas the matrix model is one over alpha. The dual is another dual. It's the dual of the matrix model.
Yes.
What is the dual of the matrix model?
Right. Right, I mean, you would, right, this matrix model should have some string theory dual, and you would have to know, I mean, how is this string theory dual related to strings in ADS? I mean, it should be some global fact, some global thing with strings in ADS that is some trivial string theory,
is
which
the
is dual.
Minus two model or something?
Yes.
This is the vehicle minus two model. It's related to vehicle minus two models.
Right. So string theory in ADS should decouple into two factors. One of them is just lives in two dimensions. You could, I mean,
in zero and minus.
In minus two dimensions, yes.
Missing D minus two robots.
Sorry, I'm kind of missing this discussion, because I thought that at the beginning you motivated and sort of convinced me that all this was right by telling me what's going on is basically you start with a straight line.
Yes.
You're not including the point of infinity.
Right.
And so you have to add that point.
Yes.
Contribution. As long as you're on the sphere and everything's globally defined,
right.
You don't have any matrix model contributions.
Well, in that case it's actually You don't have a straight line in that case. But okay, you can't discuss really this anomaly. The circle there would be still the same result as the circle here. The straight line would be different.
No, but I mean, if you have global ADS and you have a global, you know, the theory is defined on a sphere.
Right, I'm saying, you're right, there is no anomaly.
All the loops are closed, then everything is fine, there's no anomaly.
There is no anomaly. I'm saying still that the circle would be given by this matrix model, but not, you can't find that, it's not going to be an anomaly.
Circle is still given.
It's
I see. So that
there is no line. Right, yeah.
Okay. So that was the thrust of the sort of, I don't know, minus two grains or something?
Well, no, the issue is, here we see that there... I can write the Wilson loop for a closed curve as something times, right? E to the m times a... of the open one. I did show this in perturbation theory. I didn't show that it's actually quadratic, but I did show that there is this matrix model contribution. And this is true to all. There is this decoupling. There's decoupling between two factors. So if you calculate a partition function, the exact partition function in string theory with some boundary condition, there is going to be a term that will depend on whether it's an open surface or whether it's an open line or a closed line, a disk or an upper the upper half plane. And this will come at all, there's going to be this difference at all orders in lambda, at all orders in G string, at all orders in alpha prime. And so the most natural thing to say is that there, you have the that the string partition function has two parts that decouple, and one of them is this thing, which should be dual to strings in minus two dimensions. The matrix, or to any other dual of to the dual string dual of the matrix model. So it's some subtle global.
Which you don't see when you do string perturbation.
And what's worse, it's, you know, it's. You saw at the disk level, it should be the different, you know, I don't know what the right way of doing strings in ADS is, but it should be the difference between the partition function on the disk and the partition function on the half plane. Somehow, there should be a difference there.
So this is another class of open strings? Which are subtly different from the open strings we're used to?
Well, those are not really open in this. The boundary is at infinity. So those are
infinite strings.
Those are infinite strings. Those are type 2B strings in ADS, which extend to infinity, not little strings, but big strings. And there should be something related to the fact of how they behave at infinity, whether they're closed or infinite. So let me conclude. We have an exact expression for a circular Wilson loop for all n and lambda. Not lambda factorial, it's an exponential mark. There are non-trivial tests in comparing this to ADS. Still, some of it is not totally understood. General anomaly arguments means that it's true for general Wilson loops. It's a very general result. We have a prediction, if you want, for a Toft loop at weak coupling, and some other interesting questions. Thank you.
Thank you.